Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, Pulitzer Prize winners in poetry and prose. Pulitzer Prize winning culture critic Wesley Morris first in just a minute on why the Donald Sterling comments hit home more than many other outbursts of racism. And later we'll finish up with a brand new Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry, Brooklyn's own Vijay Seshadri. We'll also wrap up our series, Sleep Cycles Through the Life Cycle today. Seniors in Sleep, Getting Your Z's When You're 64. And 74, and 84, and 94, and 104. And we have Desmond Tutu's daughter, Mpaw Tutu. Together, they are launching a global forgiveness campaign, which maybe brings us back to Donald Sterling, the now banned for life owner of the L.A. Clippers of the NBA for his racist rant caught on tape. Let's talk to Pulitzer Prize-winning culture critic Wesley Morris from the sports writing site Grantland. Thanks for coming on, Wesley. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Given Donald Sterling's long history of documented racist statements, even though most people didn't hear of him until last week, even a big housing discrimination settlement, why do you think this is becoming the national moment of outrage that it is?
Because there's documented evidence in it. I mean, and it's so inflammatory. And it's not just – it's not the same thing as that farmer last week in Arizona sort of saying that black people were happy in slavery. This is a guy who has no sort of daily – no ostensible daily relationship to black people. This is a – you know, Donald Sterling is a guy who owned an NBA basketball team. He is – one of his sources of income is on – by having black employees
for
and
30
treating them
years,
as entertainment. Exactly.
And he's still in this place.
I mean, so the
you know,
irony,
I was actually
going to
ask if you think that the fact that the Clive and Bundy thing was happening in the days immediately before set up this national response, or if it's a coincidence.
I think that there was probably a tipping point, like even in a week. I mean, I think that one of the other things that Rembert Brown and I, who had this conversation on Grantland, got into. And, you know, one of the things that really fascinated us that we didn't really go too deeply into was just this idea that in the last 6 years, we have seen a lot of veiled racism, a lot of implied racism, a lot of black people sort of reading between the lines, a lot of liberals sort of reading between the lines, a lot of conservatives saying things that go right up to the line of racism, and then saying, but, you know, I dare you to call me on this. And I think that if a word like cathartic is actually applicable to the situation, I think the thing that is cathartic about this is, for a lot of people, is that there is actual documented evidence of his. I mean, there's other evidence of his having done things through lawsuits and that sort of thing, but actual sort of extra legal proof of him saying these things in conversation with another human being.
And I wonder how cathartic you think it is to have had that moment yesterday with the new NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, being so emphatic in the news conference. I was out and about in Brooklyn and I was listening to it live on the radio. I wasn't watching him. I didn't have a TV, but I was listening to it and it was really bracing hearing him come out. And many people are commenting on how emphatically first person he was in his announcement. Here's a few seconds.
When I first heard it, I was shocked. I was hoping somehow that it was fraudulent or that it had been doctored, that possibly it wasn't indeed Donald Sterling. I've known Donald for over 20 years, so I suspected it was his voice, and we set about immediately investigating. And that was my reaction to sort of bear down and say, let's get to the bottom of this as quickly as possible.
So I was shocked. I was outraged. Personal statement by Adam Silver, and then getting to the maximum possible punishments, $2.5 million fine, banned for life. And that really made a lot of people sit up and notice when he said it, banned for life, and then recommending that the other owners band together and take the required 75% vote to require him to sell the team. So was that a cathartic moment for you, or do you think Adam Silver's getting too much credit.
I mean, I'm using cathartic for lack of a better term at the moment. I also think that this is the only thing Adam Silver could have done. I mean, the only moral thing he could have done.
But not many people expected him to go this far,
sure,
right? They thought maybe a $1 million fine. Maybe.
This guy has so much money. Like $2.5 million is nothing for him.
The money is completely irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. And it's more – and the banning for life is another – it's not irrelevant. It's a thunderously symbolic punishment. But two things. Donald Sterling will win no matter what because to sell the team will reap a profit for him. And he – the financial hit doesn't really hurt him. And he's also 80 years old. And this is a sort of interesting moment that another sort of interesting moment in racism, which is that this is a kind of old guard racism, right? This is the racism that comes – it's institutional in the recalcitrance with which he believes this stuff about black people. He can really compartmentalize the difference between, you know, for instance – I mean this is the way his thinking works. I don't like meat. But I'm going to be a cattle farmer because other people do. And I know that I can make money selling beef, even though I prefer vegetables and don't think anybody should eat meat. So I think that his ability to sort of be a businessman in that situation is fascinating. I also think it's fascinating that his mistress, who everybody knew he was seeing for, you know, as long as he'd been seeing her and whatever else he'd been doing with his wife, the whole thing, the many levels of irony here are just fascinating and really interesting to unpack.
And obviously people are starting to call in. Everybody is welcome. I hope we get a race and gender diverse set of calls here. So 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I have a feeling a little conservative talk radio corner aside, that this is going to be a moment pretty much of national unity on this. You're making a face. You don't know.
I mean, you don't. I don't know. People never cease to amaze me. I think that I would like to think so, yes. But I would like to think so, yes.
You also, in that context, you also wrote about the girlfriend who made the recording. An apologist for Sterling, and I can see already we have at least one on the board and some of the others aren't screened for content yet. So at least some of the apologists for Sterling are using her surreptitious and possibly illegal undercover tape as akin to police entrapment that should get the evidence thrown out of court, in this case thrown out of the public eye, I guess. You know, I Googled National Review Donald Sterling this morning, and the headline that came up was, "Even Donald Sterling is entitled to privacy." So that seems to be the most important thing that National Review can find to write about here.
But are we talking about entrapment or are we talking – I mean, look, the woman he is saying this to is a half-black, half-Latina woman. And she's – I imagine however long they were together, this was an ongoing thing. And I think that as a human being, she got to a point where she had just had enough. And I mean, I'm extrapolating.
But she was in a lawsuit and –
et cetera. But for her to have done this, I mean, I don't want to assign motivation to it beyond her having done it. But I do think that fundamentally she is a human being who, you know, I'd like to imagine had just had enough of what she considered to be reprehensible statements.
In fact, I want to get to a deeper level here because you on Grantland actually call their exchange one of the most complexly true conversations you've ever heard about race. One of the most complexly true conversations you ever heard about race. So in that context, let me play about a minute of the original tape of their exchange and get your reaction. And some people may be hearing this for the first time. So here we go, Donald Sterling and V. Stiviano.
Yeah, it bothers me a lot that you want to broadcast that you're associating with black people. Do you have to?
You associate with black people.
I'm not you and you're not me. You're supposed to be a delicate white or a delicate Latina girl.
I'm a mixed girl.
Okay, well, but we
And you're in love with me. And I'm black and Mexican, whether you like it or not.
Okay.
Whether the world accepts it or not. And you're asking me to remove something that's part of me and in my bloodstream because the world thinks different of me and you're afraid of what they're going to think because of your upbringing? You want me to have hate towards black people?
I don't want you to have hate. That's what people do. They turn things around. I want you to love them privately. In your whole life, every day you could be with them. Every single day of your life.
But why, not in public?
But why publicize it on the Instagram and why bring it to my games?
Wow.
I mean, my eyes well up just hearing her hear him say that. And whatever motivation you can assign to her for having recorded it and given it to the media, the fact of the matter is, in the moment of that conversation, she is clearly upset and baffled. And her being upset, I mean, she is culpable in a lot of cultural ways too. I mean, the thing that I find so true about this is she got in a relationship with this man, this white man, who clearly didn't like her people. Either one of them.
Yeah, right, the Mexican part or the
black
part.
The history that it plays into, the sort of American history of race that it plays into, the plantation owner and the slave mistress, the house owner and the black help or the Mexican or the, you know, Latin housekeeper. This is such a classic embodiment of the white, non-white power structure in this country. And it's like the denial that it actually is a toxic problem on both sides until something breaks.
With Wesley Morris from Grantland, Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Willie in Manhattan. You're on the air. Willie, thank you so much for calling in.
You're so welcome, Brian. Thank you so much for all that you do. You know, I wanted to make a comment. I was born and raised in Selma, Alabama during the Civil Rights Movement, and it was prevalent in my area, and the television was always on during the marches or anything that associated with civil rights. And, you know, so I'm aware of the bigots. And I heard about this story a few weeks ago through a friend of mine, a few days ago through a friend of mine. And the first thing that came to mind was the day that Fannie Lou Hamer was being beaten. And the person that was beating her was fondling her at the same time. Mm-hmm. And my point is, the young lady that was with this Sterling guy, I don't understand this. Because he had to make some sort of racist comments to her during their intimate times. He had to do something else because these are the perverts. These are the bigots. And they exist at the moment we're speaking. He's not the only one. So I applaud Mr. Silver for making a statement about this. But it doesn't stop
racism. It doesn't stop the racism.
No.
Willie, thank you. Of course not.
It's true.
People are referring to Sterling in particular as having a plantation mindset. That term keeps coming up. But you wrote that you've long thought that the basic relationship in the NBA, white men owning and trading black men, is a plantation relationship. So how far do you want to go with that when the athletes have a union and agents and make a lot of money and can choose which teams to sign with?
I mean, I think that is an outgrowth of just good business practice and what happens when you own something that is incorporated or is just a business. But I mean, fundamentally, you know, taking out the mechanics of how an NBA team works, at the end of the day, you have a league that is where most of the owners are white and most of the players are black. And it was sort of the thing with Sterling, when you could look the other way. There have been other coaches who've said, or other owners who've said other things over the years. But with Sterling, it became increasingly hard to not think about the degree to which he himself had a sort of plantation mindset. I mean, he would say things like, you know, his goal was to have a team full of, you know, black men, or like coach, like having a white coach coach a bunch of black guys. That was how he, I mean, I'm getting the quote exactly wrong.
What would be different in terms of the dignity of the players if the owners were more black, but there was the same financial deals being made?
And Donald Sterling was still in the mix, or?
No, to your larger critique of the owned and owner structure of the NBA.
I think it would change the dynamic that that owners feel they have toward the classic owners. And, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the way in which that owner mindset has changed in the last couple of decades. But I think that you would just have this less fraught relationship. And I'm not saying that it's inherently because the owners are white and the players are black. It's that things like this, these play into the institutional aspect of that power dynamic.
Erica in Newark, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning. I was calling because, okay, I agree what he said was despicable. That's no doubt about it. However, this victimization that we're having for this poor, defenseless girl, I mean, please, listen, 80-year-old men just don't start saying racist things overnight. I am quite sure that she knew, wife knew, NBA. I mean, Brian Gumbel was on Meet the Press talking about on Sunday saying that people in the NBA knew what this guy was about. The NAACP knew that he had lawsuits against him for discrimination. I believe everyone knew, but because this guy was shelling out tickets, shelling out money, people turned their heads, took his money, and didn't want to think about it. So for all, oh, she's poor, her, poor this person, oh, we didn't know, I think that's such a load of crap. I really do. And I don't believe the NBA did anything that was so groundbreaking. What else are they going to do? And the man is 80 years old, a lifetime ban. Come on. He's going to sell the team, make $1 billion, and go and move off. His wife is going to get half. And it's a win-win situation.
Leslie, talk to
Erica. I mean, I've said it. I agree with you. I also don't think that Viciviano is a victim in the classic sense. I do think that she was subjected to things that she became increasingly uncomfortable with and wanted it, I guess, to expose.
The wife is doing a lawsuit. You don't think that's kind of odd? The wife is suing her, and next thing you know, oh, let me do these. I'm taping my boyfriend that I've been with, and there's pictures of her with the boyfriend, right, with Sterling and his wife.
So he's as bad.
Come on. It's like everyone's hands are dirty here.
Everybody's hands are dirty. I'm not arguing against that, but some people have dirtier hands. I mean, and I think that the thing about Donald Sterling being caught saying these things is that he can't say them and continue to profit on treating black people as dehumanizing black people and then making money off of them at the same time and denying them housing and everything else.
Robert in Rigo Park, you're on WNYC. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Brian, how you doing? I'd like to make a statement. Of course, I agree that Adam Silver did the right thing. The statements were atrocious. But could you explain to me why, with 50,000 people not having a home to live in New York City, millions of people have no jobs, no health care, serious problems, why isn't the world and all these NBA billionaires, millionaires, players standing up, President Obama standing up? How does this issue the world stands up with, but the issue of serious problems in the United States, there's a total silence?
Yes. It is a great point. It's just, I guess, the way human psychology works, Wesley. It gets back to what you were saying at the beginning. You know, all the systemic disadvantage, much of which is still racial in this country, leaving people in horrible life circumstances. But when a guy who owns a basketball team says something, then the media explodes.
Right. And I think that, but the thing that he is saying is so inflammatory and cuts very pointedly to people's humanity. And I think that is, and I also think that part of this too is, excuse me, this is a white guy saying this in a way that he is speaking on behalf in these conversations on behalf of white people. And I think there's a way in which there are some people, and frankly, for my taste, not enough, who are saying, look, this is Donald Sterling. This isn't me. But I also think that the caller before Erica had a great point about this being an open – it wasn't even an open secret. It was just common knowledge.
People knew who he was.
Right, and he is not alone. I mean, there's no way – and Rembert made this great point in our conversation. I mean, Rembert said that, you know, for a guy – I asked Rembert basically what – how does he sleep at night? How does he – how is he allowed to sort of go to bed every night? And Rembert says he's allowed to go to bed every night because he is surrounded by people who think like him and think that he's in the right. He will be allowed to think that this is a witch hunt and that he is being persecuted for things that he said in private. And not, it's not that he said what he said was wrong. It's that he was the recordings were surreptitious, and he no one should know that he feels this way about black people.
Wesley Morris from the sports journalism site Grantland, as we talk about the Donald Sterling situation, you give LeBron James credit in your conversation.
I give him some credit.
Rembert Brown, for what you called evolving into a premier taker of stands in American sports. And you see a quote of his from over the weekend as revealing the mindset of being owned, even when you're LeBron James. So we couldn't find that exact clip, but we found something else that he said to a reporter over the weekend. So let's play a little LeBron James and talk about what you wrote about him.
I mean, obviously, if it's true, it's very sensitive. And, you know, I had my statement before the game, and I'm going to stick by it. There's no room for that in our game. We've found a way to make this the greatest game in the world. And for comments like that, it taints our game, and we can't have that. Can't have it from a player. We can't have it from an owner. We can't have it from a fan, and so on and so on. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, Hispanic, or whatever the case may be. We can't have that a part of our game. And, you know, the commission will take care of it. We're sure of that. And we'll continue to build this game the best way we can, because it's been an unbelievable 2014 playoffs. And we don't want Donald Sterling's comments to overshadow what this game means to everyone, including the fans.
All right. And he had also gone on to say he should be out of the league. And there it is.
Yeah, no, I think that LeBron James is the best player in American basketball. And for him to have feelings about this, I think he would have feelings. I think all the players have feelings about this, and they're all offended. I think that LeBron is the spokesperson, the sort of cultural spokesperson for the National Basketball Association. And I think that people sort of look to him for leadership on these kinds of issues because he's demonstrated it on his own in the past. And so now he, you know, when these things happen, God forbid if they happen again, they'll turn to LeBron.
And you reference when LeBron and his teammates staged that photo op wearing hoodies after Trayvon Martin was killed.
Right.
So in the usual basketball parlor game of asking who's the greatest of all time, LeBron James or Michael Jordan, we've got a different kind of metric where it's actually not close, right?
No, I mean, Rembert made a great point. Rembert actually should just be here. Rembert made a great point about the ways and the irony that you know, LeBron has passed Jordan as a political person, you know, forget athlete. And I, you know, for Jordan to then come out and say what he said about Donald Sterling over the weekend was important too, being one of the only, you know, one of two non-white owners in the league. I think it is an interesting position for LeBron to be in. I think that the conversation before Adam Silver issued his verdict was what more could the players do? What more defiant stance could they take? And I think they were waiting to find out what the NBA was going to do to Sterling before they decided among themselves what to do. And so it was heartening yesterday to hear Kevin Johnson, who's a players' representative, come out and say that they thought that Adam Sterling's verdict was the right one, and they were satisfied with it.
Kevin Johnson, former player.
Yes, mayor of Sacramento.
Right. And from what I've heard, has a little bit of his own slumlord rap in his background? Morally different?
Yeah, no, I mean, being a slumlord and denying people housing are two totally – I mean, I'm not excusing what Kevin Johnson may or may not be doing as a property owner. But telling people that you don't – I mean, issuing that you don't want a certain type of person living in your residencies based on race is a slightly different thing than being a crappy landlord.
One more call. Diana in Hoboken. You're on WNYC. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I'm having a real problem with the lack of attention to this whole aspect of this man in the privacy of his own home being exposed in this way. It seems to me very scary, as a good liberal, as a person who knows this guy is a jerk, that we're living in a country that's almost reminiscent of a kind of Stalinist state, where in the something he really had no intention of ever saying has been broadcast in this way, kind of crucifying him. I mean, obviously the guy is a jerk, but I don't hear any of the media really talking about the despicableness of that whole aspect to the degree that I really feel it should be talked about. I mean, this is America. The one thing we feel, we have a right to this kind of privacy. That is different to me than the kind of prejudice you show in, you know, the way you deal with your real estate holdings. And I really want help
but
with
he,
it, because I'm not quite getting why nobody is really talking as much about that as they should be, I think.
He's shown I think the thing that's so important about this, I mean, the civil liberties aspect of this is one thing, I guess. But this is also his having done this on top of the other sort of documented cases in which
that's kind of nonsense, because they were about to honor him with the NAACP.
Well, that's the NAACP in Los Angeles. I mean, I don't think that's a good idea either. I mean, there's a lot of complicated things happening on both sides of this issue, and as Erica said before, I mean, everybody's hands are dirty in this situation. The NBA's, the NAACP's, but I think that, I mean, I'm not. I would be interesting to hear more legal experts and maybe even civil liberties experts or activists talk about the idea of having a private recording aired.
But
publicly.
Once it is aired publicly, once he's caught on tape and everybody knows, Diana,
yeah,
do you think then the punishment should not be what it is? Because then you have a boss having created, inadvertently or not, a hostile work environment.
And that's absolutely true. And you're absolutely right. And, you know, as somebody who's Jewish, I'm sure if I heard some horribly anti-Semitic comments, I would be filled with horror. But I would still want to – I would hope that I would still want to defend his right to have that privacy. I mean, it's back to the time where people are telling on their parents in as I say, in, you know, Stalinist Russia. I mean, at what point do we say, you know what, this – who knows? Maybe he was saying it – we don't know why he was saying it. Maybe he was exaggerating his own emotions. But for that to be broadcast and to be used – I mean, use the lawsuit against him to get him out. Use lots of legitimate reasons for why this man shouldn't own a team. But to use this instance, his girlfriend who he's talking to in his own home, to use that as the instance to why we suddenly decide that he's totally unacceptable. Again, I just think this is a real, almost kind of a threat to democracy, to what we hold most dear.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't go. And I don't know about the Stalinist Russia comparison, but you hear her moral point. We have a minute left, so say whatever you want, and then we're done.
I mean, I don't know. I think that one of the things that Rembert and I had hoped this conversation would provoke was more conversations about the many, many issues that are raised in this issue. And I think that I'm not comfortable with the comparison of this to Stalinism, you know, being somewhat versed in how Stalinism worked. But I think it's a fair thing for people who don't really want to focus on the ultimate problem in this, which is his racism, to sort of latch on to this idea that she tricked him into saying these things. And I don't think anybody is saying that he doesn't really believe this stuff, but that he wouldn't have said it otherwise. He has said it otherwise. This is just now we have 15 minutes of him saying it. I'm hoping that the thing that comes out of this is that we have more conversations. We always, when these things happen, Brian, you've done shows about this, you know, national conversation about race, and we're going to talk honestly about it. But nobody really wants to talk about it.
And then here it is.
And
it's not going to be generated by a professor or a president holding a town hall meeting and saying, from some abstract standpoint, let's talk about race. It happens when something like this lifts the veil on real conversations
about
race.
But I think the thing that's most important is that it can't just be black people talking about how upset they are. It has to be white people actually talking about racism. And
that's why the Adam Silver moment was important, I thought. And I so agree. That is this always has to include white people taking the stand.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
the fact that the
people
whole
of color
team
always talk about it. I mean, when we get together and this sort of thing happens, it's what we talk about.
When the whole team came out the other night with their jerseys inside out, white and
right.
black, it was something.
Right.
Adam Silver coming out. And so, right. On that point of agreement, we leave it with Wesley Morris, Pulitzer Prize-winning cultural commentator who writes now for the sports journalism website Grantland. Listeners, keep the conversation going on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And coming up next, the state of New York declares cheerleading officially a sport. What protecting girls' health has to do with it. Stay tuned.